PathProjects.com or go to our partners page, click on the banner.
Hey, this sport isn't easy, Scott. And if you have a dose of chafage from being on the trail a long time and getting that annoying burning in the skin, well, that can be eliminated with the right gear, and Path Projects makes it possible.
The base liner and the shorts are separate. Those base liners will help eliminate that chafage.
It's like a second skin, protecting your delicate, tender skin in the areas that can take you out of a race.
Make sure you get yourself a pair. Make sure you give gifts from Path Projects to your favorite runner. Go to pathprojects.com or click on a banner on our partners page.
Here's the scoop, Scott. Tangled wires, earbuds falling out, sore ears, block surroundings. What am I talking about?
What's the solution? Aftershocks. And there's a lot of different models available, one for every budget. If you go to our partners page and click on the banner, you can get $55 off the Adventure Bundle, regardless of which one you buy, the Titanium, the Air, or the new Aeropex, which are awesome.
I just love the sound. You know, you're not compromising anything. I have choices to put different types of earbuds in. I reach for the Aeropex often because I just enjoy the sound quality.
Go to our partners page, click on the banner, and use the code TRNBUNDLE at checkout, and you can get $55 off that Adventure Bundle.
Let it ride. Do you experience stress, have anxiety, or chronic pain? Hey, do you have trouble sleeping at least once a week?
You know, even as runners, as athletes, a lot of us have this same problem.
So what is Feels, Scott? Feels is a premium CBD delivered directly to your doorstep.
And a lot of us may not know about CBD oil, or we've heard about it. We're not really sure what it is.
Or skeptical.
One of the things that they offer is they call it their flight. And it's really kind of an interesting way to try the different dosages. So this flight has three different dosages that you can experiment with and see how that works with you.
And real human support over at Feels. You know, if you're new to CBD and you're not really sure, they offer a free hotline and even text message support to help you guide through your personal experience.
You know, I don't know that much about CBD oil, and they sent us some, and I experimented with the flights. The one thing that I was surprised at is it's really easy to use. All you do is you take that dropper, or if you're using the flight, you just drop that underneath your tongue, and that's all you do. Just leave it there for like 20 minutes.
Feels 20 seconds. Feels works naturally to help you feel better, and there's no high, there's no hangover, there's no addiction. It's safe to use.
Here's what they're going to do. They're going to give you 50% off your first order with free shipping if you go to Feels, that's F-E-A-L-S, feels.com/TRN.
All right. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Who needs prep?
Yeah. Hey, why don't you introduce us, AJW?
Have we ever prepped?
Kick this thing off, AJW.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Andy Jones Wilkins.
I'm Scott Ward.
I'm Don Freeman.
And I'm Sally McCray.
We have a good team together.
And we are thrilled to be here today. We've got a great conversation planned if we ever get to it. We're interested in the topic of comebacks. It's a topic that gets bounced around a lot in ultra and trail running, and people coming back from various things. And we thought it would be fun to get the four of us together and just explore this a little bit.
Hey, and just to start things off, how many of the four of us have had a comeback?
or struggling with one? That's probably a better answer.
Yeah. I feel like I'm constantly coming back. That's just like part of life, right?
Yeah, there's cycles. There's cycles. In the middle of the race, there's a comeback. There's cycles as we go through the race, and there's cycles as we go through training, and there's cycles as we go through everything. So I think this conversation could go just about anywhere.
Well, and we tried something new, and I'm not sure whether it worked or not, but we actually did a Facebook survey or a Facebook poll to ask what are the experiences that other runners have had. And 100% of them said that they have either experienced a layoff or are currently experiencing a layoff and wanting to come back. In fact, I gave these four options. One, I'm steady and haven't needed a comeback. Zero. Out of the 19 votes, zero said they're steady. Six votes said that they're currently in the middle of a layoff and have the desire to come back. So the second highest majority said that they're in the middle of a comeback. Five voters said that they have experienced a layoff and had successful comebacks. And eight of them said that they've experienced multiple layoffs and comebacks. So this is a topic that affects, sounds like 100% of our community, at least 19 people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're saying job layoffs?
No. Well, if you're professional,
layoff of them running.
If you're a professional runner like Sally, yes.
You're referring to when you say a layoff, as in not being able to run.
Right. Right.
Okay. I just have never used that term.
Hey, Sally, can you move your microphone a little bit? It's kind of.
Is that better?
That's much better. Thank you.
Okay.
So layoffs are important.
Do you expect me to edit that, Scott?
Okay. Yeah.
We'll see if it gets done.
So, Andy, you came up with this topic and threw it out to the group. And tell us what you were thinking about when you brought this topic up.
Well, I've always been a sucker, actually, for a good comeback story. Mm-hmm. Whether in sports or in politics or in like the entertainment or music industry, you know, when you somebody's away for a long time and then they kind of reemerge and come back. I'm just really interested in the topic as it relates to life. Sometimes even as it relates to people's livelihoods or jobs. Maybe they have a slump in their livelihood, and they come back and maybe they get a promotion after years of trying or things like that. So I've just been a sucker for it. There's something so triumphant about someone who's kind of been to the mountaintop and then had to struggle and then return to come back. And I'm particularly interested, you know, because there are all kinds of comebacks, right? There are comebacks from injuries, there are comebacks from life events that mean you're not able to do as much as you used to do. There are comebacks that are made necessary because of all kinds of factors. And some just maybe a comeback from lack of motivation. And what it takes to kind of get motivated again. So I've just been interested in it and kind of thought a lot about some more public comebacks that you've seen either in running or in sports or in entertainment. And what is it about the process of coming back that is kind of necessary? What's the recipe for a good comeback?
Do you think all comebacks have similar recipes? I mean, you take the steps. Regardless of what you have and where you're going, do you see that there's a common thread to climb out of that hole?
I think at least in sort of my non-scientific research, there is kind of a there's kind of a cycle of it, right? When whatever it is that happens that perpetuates the layoff, right? That's the first kind of, and you probably get angry and sad and maybe a little depressed when that happens, that this thing you've been doing that you love is taken away. There's that period. Then there's the acceptance. You have to accept it. Okay, here's what I'm doing. Here's my fate right now. And then once you've accepted it, you've got to go into step three, which is, you know, how am I going to dig out of this? Or am I going to dig out of this? And I think at that point, the realization that, okay, if I want to run again, if I want to compete again, if I want to play baseball again, if I want to, you know, play the piano again, here is what I'm going to have to do. I think at that point, the recipe becomes somewhat similar because you've got to have that resolve to want to come back. Once you've done that, you're on the road.
Oh, okay, AJW. Those are all great points, but I've got to back up just a bit and have you clarify for us, what is non-scientific research?
Oh yeah, yeah. So non-scientific research is just kind of asking people and looking around on the internet and not doing anything that would, let's say, require one to have footnotes at the end of the article.
Ah, good.
You know, in other words, there's nothing real scientific about it other than, hey, I remember when that guy came back. I wonder how he did it. That kind of thing.
Got it.
Hey, let's we kind of bantered across text a little bit. Let's define what a layoff is. This is very different than somebody that, you know, finished their racing season. Like I picture Sally as, well, I don't need to picture. I can look at her right now because we're on Zoom, and I can picture her in her soft, warm sweatshirt with two blankets on her because it's really cold in Southern California. And she's finished her racing season or getting close to finishing her racing season. So going into the holidays and she's taking a break. So this is a break. She's still in very good physical form, no injuries. You know, it's what we're talking is a layoff. And I think Andy mentioned it very well on a text earlier. He said a layoff is where when you start the comeback, you have to relearn how to run. And I think that's what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got to be a long enough duration that literally when you start back up running again, you're almost learning to do it for the first time. You know, maybe even not even able to run, I don't know, a certain mileage that was easy for you to do when you were in the midst of your run. Life, you now it's like you're huffing and puffing just to get, you know, down the road. It's impacted you enough that whatever it is that's caused the layoff, injury, job change, relationship issues, whatever, it's of enough duration that it's like, oh my God, I got to start completely over here. I think to me, and of course that might be different for everybody, but it's a lot different than say just taking, you know, taking a couple weeks off and then going out for a run and you're like, oh, I'm a little bit sore or whatever. Or I'm fat and out of shape. And, you know, by fat and out of shape, you mean you're like 2 pounds above where you were and you're running 7 minute miles instead of 6 minute miles. That doesn't count.
Hey, Sally, as a coach and you being part of Team Nike and really seeing a lot of different runners, is it okay to have this kind of a layoff? Can you come back? Is it okay? Is there hope?
Yes, I think there's always hope for every single layoff, regardless of how severe it is and what area. So whether we're talking about, you know, physical injury or even mental. I mean, I think that sometimes the mental part can be a little bit more daunting for people. Like if they built up to a race for a long time and then they failed in such a way that they lost all motivation and they didn't want to, you know, they maybe even lost themselves. Like, what do I do from here? And how am I going to get back out there? I just put all that energy in. So I've experienced all sides of, you know, having to come back in to running and feel strong. But what I realized is that, you know, that period of being laid off, you learn something about yourself and your whole perspective. And just when you wake up in the morning, you're looking at life in a different way. So instead of waking up in the morning and I'm going to go train or I'm going to focus on this run today, you're kind of forced to focus on other things. You're focused on taking care of yourself and recovering and then, or even just filling that space with something else. And so in many ways, your mind and, you know, just how you're viewing your life at that time, it changes. And you can either approach that with sadness, of feeling left out, of feeling like, well, I'm not doing what I love anymore. Or you can approach it with, all right, well, this is a new season. Like, what can I discover now? Like, what does all this mean for me at this point in my life? And if I were to relate to that directly, in 2012, I had a stress fracture. I remember the first time I attempted to run, I remember that I was more afraid than I'd ever been to run. And it was such a weird feeling because I didn't want to feel that pain. And all I thought in my mind was this could happen again and this could put me back again. And at the end of 2012, I went out to this Xterra race, like a small local 15K race, to test out my leg. And I remember being so nervous and really afraid at the start line and thinking, this isn't me. Like I had fractured it in the, realized it was fractured in the middle of a 100-mile race. So it was like, I know how to do these miles. I'm lining up at a 15K race. Like, I should be okay. And these are local trails that I know. But I was so wrapped up in being paralyzed by fear. And, you know, I ran the race and my leg was fine. And I started 2013 being able to train. But it took me a while before I could really trust my body again. And it also taught me just a lot about how to better take care of my body, but to truly appreciate what it was that I was able to do. Cause I had never been in that place before where I had been forced to sidestep, wait, not run, and then come back hoping that maybe I could still endure like I had done before. So I think that'll always be in the back of my mind. It's one of the things that will always encourage me to be committed to like strength training and just training in the right way. So yeah, I'll pause there. I'm sure other people want to say stuff.
I'll throw a comment in there. I've had the chance to work with some high school athletes that end up with a strain to their ankle or something, and then they can't get on the field, and they think that the season's over for them. And just like us, if we can't run, it doesn't mean we can't work on our game. There's a lot of things still to work on with the guys on the sidelines. They can go watch films, or they can go learn how the plays go down. So when they are ready to come back, they can execute with higher efficiency and intensity and confidence. So there's a lot of things we can do just because we can't run. Maybe it's time to stretch. Maybe it's time to work on other things that our game is lacking. Maybe it's
volunteer.
Nutrition.
Or go volunteer to race.
Yeah, volunteer. Get out there. And so with that, I like your comment there, Sally. With that, AJW, you've had quite a comeback. Mm-hmm. You've had something that was, a great running career, and all of a sudden you're faced with, can I run again? I remember seeing you at the infield on Western States, and you, as a fresh set of legs, looked worse than some of the runners with 100 miles on them. You were favoring that hip and had to do something about it. So why don't you walk us through a little bit about how you were confronted with possibly a career-ending situation, and how you've come back and have signed up for some of the most prestigious races on our planet.
Well, thanks, John. And
off-planet ones.
Yeah,
not the intergalactic ones. The ones here on this planet.
That's right. You
know, when Sally opened with what I believe is in my unscientific research, I realized is one of the actually step one in a comeback, and that's believing that you can do it. It's actually having the hope and the optimism and the positive attitude, the positive mindset that no matter how bad this is, whether you're Sally and you're literally scared to run 15K because of a stress fracture, or you're Andy Jones Wilkins and you've had two, you know, major hip resurfacing surgeries over a 2.5-year period, you've got to try to overcome that fear with, okay, I can do this. I may not be as confident or as brash or as even as fast or as strong as I once was, but if I can get this straight in my mind that I can do this, then the rest will take care of itself. For me, just real quickly, I had a hip resurfacing on my left side after a serious arthritis in September of 2015, and had a very standard recovery from that, and was able to run 6 months after the surgery, and was able to run and finish the Hard Rock 100 4 months after that. So within a year of having this major surgery on my left side, I was back running 100 milers. That I would call somewhat of a standard comeback. So fast forward to, and I knew this was going to be the reality, to April of 2018, it was time for my other hip to be done. I'd kind of been told when I had the first hip that eventually the second one was going to give out. It gave out. I had that surgery, and that recovery was and has been so much more arduous. That surgery was now almost 19 months ago. I am just now back to running consistently, which to me is, you know, 8 to 12 hours a week, running every day, getting into the mountains. But it has been an absolute struggle. And for me, there were three things, three things. First of all, that optimism. I had to believe I could do it. And there were times where I was like, screw this. It's been a year. I've had this surgery. I'm not getting any better. I might as well go work on my golf game or buy a bike or start swimming. And I had to believe, no, there's an opportunity to get back to running. Then, frankly, I had to be just really, really flexible and adaptable. One day I'd go out and I'd feel fine and I'd be like, yes, I'm back. The next day I would go out and I'd feel like crap and I couldn't even get through a 5-mile workout. And I was like, oh, here I am. So just a mental roller coaster of up and down. And I had to be adaptable and say, okay, I'm gonna hike today. I'm gonna ride my bike today. I'm gonna practice using poles today. I'm gonna go to the weight room today and do those strength and flexibility exercises that my surgeon told me that I needed to do. As you just said, there's always something you can do to make yourself better. And then, at the same time, you have to be flexible. I found that I had to be disciplined. And that meant disciplined in, as a 52-year-old man who's gotten a lot slower, I had to be disciplined in doing my exercise. I mean, I would joke that it's like, oh my God, it takes me an hour and a half to prepare for a 1-hour run, you know, doing my stretches, warming up my body, getting the pieces in place, you know, that's hard. And it's especially hard. You have to have a successful comeback. You have to put the before comeback self away. You know, it's too easy to remember, oh my gosh, I used to be able to do this loop in 50 minutes and now it took me an hour and 10. You've got to put that away and instead say, hey, at least I was able to do it in an hour and 10. And so that then gives you the hope. And then what I like to see happen is that it builds on itself. And in the successful comebacks I've seen and heard about, there's a momentum that comes with them where it's like, okay, I'm out of that sort of, I'm out of critical condition and I'm in stable condition. This is more in the mind than anything. And now I'm actually coming back and I'm targeting these goals and I'm signing up for ultras again and I'm at peace with myself. And that's about the stage where I am right now.
I want to ask both of you a question about vulnerability. And we've had a whole podcast on vulnerability and a comeback. I think that at least in my situation, it's a real hard thing to overcome where I'm a little embarrassed to go out and run where people can see me and see me running slow or taking lots of walk breaks. Or I would assume because you both are top of the heap, you know, being able to come back and say, you know what, maybe I'm not going to be on the podium, for a while. But I'm still going to go out there and be disciplined, like you say, Andy. Well, tell us about Sally. Did you struggle with that vulnerability issue, or you're a pretty tough lady? Maybe you don't.
No, I have. I definitely have. I think that it's maybe an unfortunate part of our human nature to immediately think of one to compare ourselves, but also to be maybe a little bit too consumed with what others may think or what their perceptions are, or what their judgments are. I think that this is an ongoing conversation I have with my athletes and just people in everyday life, that we want to walk into a room or we want to arrive at a trailhead or at a race and we want to be impressive. And I think that, you know, it, again, so much of this goes into mindset. I think is the most powerful part of this whole discussion is really it's where are you shifting your mind and how is it that you just approach these things as a whole? It really would alleviate a lot of stress and give courage if we would just do things for the right reasons and realize that at one point or the other, every person that you come up next to? Is it a different part of their journey, of their story? And so we are not all on the up together. We're not all on the down together. And so if we, I think one of the most helpful things has been for me is if I just approach any situation with love and compassion for other people and not focus so much on what are people going to think of me and how can I impress people? That isn't my job. That's actually a really vain and exhausting thing to do, because we can never impress people enough. We can never, you know, and so I think that, when I was coming back, I had to be okay with completely embracing my weakness. Maybe that I didn't look as fit as I wanted to do, you know, I didn't fit my shorts the way I wanted to. I wasn't going to be at the front of the pack, like where I wanted to be. I wasn't going to be on the podium. And this has been several times. I mean, it was after having kids, every time I came back from kids, I gained a lot of weight with both of my children. And so, you know, it was realizing, like, even just walking into the gym and feeling kind of insecure about, you know, getting onto a treadmill or lifting weights. And then it was like, okay, I'm either going to continue to beat myself up or I'm going to embrace all the good things that I'm doing right now in this. And so it's counting, like, today I laced up my shoes and I showed up. This has nothing to do with how I look. Today I set out to do a 1 hour run or a 1 hour workout in the gym. My goal wasn't about being fast. It was just putting the work in. And I did that. It didn't feel great. I didn't feel strong, but I actually did it. And so, and I actually spoke about this just last week when I was up in San Francisco for North Face 50. I said, one of the most unappealing characteristics of being successful in training and in racing. We always talk about hard work, no pain, no gain, train hard, train harder than everyone else. But really the most successful pieces are patience and perseverance. And that's something that isn't glamorous. It's very unsexy. It's paying attention to the details. It's just getting up every day and choosing to do the work. It has nothing to do with how fast or how far you went. It's just consistently believing and moving forward in hope, knowing that if I do something every day, something's going to change. And patience is really difficult. It's hard to be patient when you know you have to progress slowly. But if you persevere in that and being slow, then you're eventually become stronger. And that's where your strength and your speed is going to come from. And so I have really enjoyed the journey as the years have gone on, and, you know, setbacks and failures have, you know, they become more familiar to me. I realize that they are just as much a part of succeeding on standing on top of that podium, as the hard work. I think that a naive athlete, a new athlete, an infantile athlete is going to say, you know, I had a bad day today. This stinks. I don't think I can reach my goal. Or I have an injury. Oh my gosh. Like, this is the end of it. I can never do it. Those are the immediate responses. But somebody that is seasoned in training, they realize, oh no, like the failures and the crappy days and the injuries, this is supposed to happen because we're imperfect human beings. If we were perfect, then yeah, you'd have a perfect career. But it's realizing that when those things come, if you receive them with, all right, yeah, this is the part of my journey now where I now get to deal with the setback. I get to deal with moving a little bit slower, and I get to learn again this lesson of what it means to have hope, even when things don't go my way, even when I'm not doing what I want to do. I now am going to really sow in being patient and having perseverance, because I think that's very difficult, but we build upon that and we use it for many years to come.
A lot of times these setbacks aren't, there's not something that, like, you're running and you fall off a cliff. Do you have some clues that are coming of an injury coming, much like a bonk in a race? There are many clues that your body gives you as you're going down the trail that allow you to see, hey, looks like I'm getting a bit dehydrated. It looks like my pace is a little too fast. It looks like something. You have clues along the way. So as we become more veterans and away from these novice athletes, the more veterans or your coach can see these things that are coming at you. AJW?
I wanted to respond to Scott. Scott, I'm so glad you said what you said about being embarrassed. You know, Sally told her story of going to that 15K. I had my experience like that just about 6 weeks ago. It was a small little 25K down in Tennessee. Pretty hilly, but it was maybe a couple hundred runners, and it was the first time I'd put a bib on of any kind since the surgery, actually since January of 2018. And I went in there and I was a little embarrassed. Like, I knew I was going to be slow. I was maybe a couple of pounds overweight. I can, like Sally and you guys, you can kind of, because of the nature of the sport, it's kind of so small and everybody knows everybody. Like, I could kind of tell that people were looking at me there, you know, people recognize my voice or whatever. And I was very, very self-conscious, almost like a newbie kind of self-conscious. And then we started and the race was going on and I'm running along and like about an hour into it, someone who's running along with me says, "Hey, you're AJW, right?" I was like, yeah, it's great to be here. The trails are awesome. And he kind of turned and he said, "What are you doing all the way back here with us?" Mm-hmm. And it kind of hit me I proceeded to kind of stay with them the rest of the time and realized how much fun that people have back there in the, what we call the middle of the pack and so forth. But I kind of had to swallow my pride a little bit there and realize this is kind of my new normal. And, you know, but then when I went to a 50K a couple of weeks ago, you know, after that experience, I was kind of becoming a little bit more used to maybe being that way and a little bit less self-conscious about, you know, maybe not being the guy I once was, and maybe the new guy I am is just as good, just in a different way, you know. Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of reframe it for yourself, and then in that context, possibly reframe it for others. Because of course, as you guys know, if we so choose, people in the public can see what we do when we run on our daily basis on social media or on Strava, things like this. And I think it takes a great deal of strength to admit that and to kind of get over, Scott, as you said, that kind of potential embarrassment or humiliation, and yet doing it. What's the alternative is not participating. And for me, that wasn't an option. Like, I wanted to be, I spent my year away volunteering, supporting other runners in races, you know, going to some of my favorite events and just being present, but it wasn't the same as actually participating in them. And I've realized that over these last two experiences, and it makes a big difference. And so that embarrassment, that self-consciousness, that you know, if you need, it's hard, but you want to be confident enough in who you are. Like Sally said, maybe you're walking into the gym and the shorts don't quite fit you the way they used to or the way you'd like them to, but you're still walking into the gym. And maybe that is motivating to you that, you know, a month from now, hopefully these shorts will fit me the way I want them to. And you patiently take those little steps and make it work. And I think that's what can make the comeback so satisfying to the comebacker, if you will, is making those little steps, having that patience and perseverance, as Sally referred to, and kind of coming out the side a better version of yourself, even if it is now in the middle of the pack or the back of the pack. I joke with people that, you know, the old AJW would go to race websites and see what the course records are. The new AJW goes to race websites to see what the cutoffs are.
I love that. You know, one thing as you were talking, Andy, that just hit me was, and it comes back to the whole community and tribe part of this, that we need to embrace those people that have had these layoffs and put our arms around them and say, you know, we want you back on the trails. We want you back in our community. You're a valuable part. And I think the way that I started into this is a friend of ours, Don and I, who had cancer. And he went through a massive surgeries trying to get the cancer removed and chemo and, you know, lost a lot of weight. And I said, you know, he was a friend of mine and I'd always wanted to run a marathon and said, "Hey, let's go run together." And it was easy for him to take a newbie out to the trail and say, okay, this is how you do it. And he it helped with his ego because he had a little bit of an ego, didn't he, Don?
Still has access to us somehow.
Anyway, but I think that by putting your arm around somebody that hasn't been out there that is desiring to come back, I think that helps a lot to jump over that hurdle of ego.
Mm-hmm. I think, can I just add on to that too? Because I think this really, I love this topic. I find that whenever I show up to like a group run, let's take like a social run, and if I'm coaching it or leading it or whatever, I'm always amazed at how many people will come up to me and say, hey, by the way, like I'm not really a runner, or oh, I'm going to be in the back of the pack, or there's always like this, that when we gather together, this immediate urgency where we feel like we have to let everyone know, just so you know, don't have any expectations of me. You know, it's pretty apparent I'm out of shape and I'm just going to be back here. And you know, it's this mindset of, if I were to sit in a room of runners and if we were all to talk about things we didn't like about ourselves or wish we could improve upon, everybody would have a laundry list of things. They would all talk about, you know, their, you know, wanting their body to look a certain way or wanting to run at a different pace or, you know, frustrations. And so I feel like if you are coming back from a layoff, or if you are someone that is bold enough to be okay with exactly where you are in that weakness and that building stage and maybe just completely out of shape, unbeknownst to you, you are giving the people around you a lot of courage and a lot of hope that they can do that too. And I think that we all need that. I think the gathering of people together, it's so important just for that, and applauding people that, hey, you showed up, period, done. There's nothing else beyond that. And if you keep showing up, you are going to get better and you are going to get stronger and things are going to change, and it's not going to be smooth sailing, but this is what we all do. And so, you know, if I think it's just that idea of when you, it's sad to have that setback, it's sad to have that injury or that failure, but when you take your eyes off yourself and realize, wow, just because I'm showing up and I don't look or feel great, I know that other people are going to have the courage to do the same thing and realize that it's okay.
And you know, ironically, our community doesn't judge, I don't think. You know, despite, you know, the guy, I don't think the person that was commenting to you, AJ, why are you back here? I don't think he was judging you.
No.
I don't think that we judge.
Kind of a compliment, and so, actually.
And we should take that out of, that helps with the vulnerability and the ego issue, is know that regardless of where you are in the pack, our tribe isn't going to judge. They're glad that you're there.
Well, look at the golden hour. There's yeah, more eyes on the golden hour than almost any other phase of the race. We respect.
Well, I should tell you too that there was another guy in this pack at that 25K who said, "Oh man, I can't wait to tell my wife I beat AJW." So I mean, there's a plus side of that too.
Hey,
you know?
Hey, Andy, did you put a kick in at the end and put him to shame? Sorry, dude, not today. You know, just a little side trail here. Before Andy proposed this topic for a podcast, I was actually reading, I don't know where I was reading, about Allison Felix. I don't know if that name rings a bell.
Oh, yeah. I love her.
I love her, too. Yeah.
Huge fan.
Yeah, she's a sprinter, and she recently came back and became the most decorated gold medal World Cup athlete of all time. Took over Usain Bolt's record. She has 12 World Cup gold medals, and it was after she had a baby. And
mm-hmm.
She talked in the article of, you know, how important it was for her to have this child, and it's much bigger than running, much bigger than her, but she actually had to go through an emergency C-section at 32 weeks. And just shortly, it was about 8 months after that, she was able to start running. And then very quickly, was able to come back and earn this 12th gold medal. So, you know, even the elites have this. She mentioned also that a lot of her success coming back was due to the other women in running that were encouraging to her. And she was very grateful for that sisterhood.
She's so humble. She's an amazing athlete. And yes, her story is incredible. And she had, I mean, there's a host of things that she had to deal with and on the way up to that comeback. And
huge postpartum depression, I think she had.
Yeah. Stuff with sponsors and just, you know, and she's a very well-known public figure. And so, you know, it's easy to feel those high expectations and that pressure, that compounds and really plays on your mental game quite a bit. She's so inspiring.
Don, yes. Talk to us about the Sawchuk 7. We've talked about it previously on the podcast, but I think it means something in this topic.
Well, I'm gonna pass that right over to AJW because he's the one that told me about Sawchuk 7.
Oh,
so
okay.
our mutual old friend Kevin Sawchuk, who's a 10-time Western States finisher, great Northern California ultra runner. He had a theory. And we've since coined it the Sawchuk 7, that you have seven, that any given ultra runner, any given person has like seven high quality years of running. They may run for longer, but that there's sort of a shelf life on high quality, whatever your measure of high quality is of 7 years. And then you're going to have some sort of a deterioration. And ever since I heard that theory, I've wanted to debunk it, you know, not so much myself, but I've wanted to see it debunked. And of course we have people in the sport who've been able to debunk it. Megan Laws and Carl Meltzer and Sally. I mean, people who've been at a higher level for longer than 7 years, but Kevin would probably push back and say, well, those are the outliers. You know, the main people are, you know, the mainstream seven's about as long as you're going to be able to sustain it. With respect to this conversation around comebacks, I do think, and what I'm sort of experimenting with myself is if I had, let's just say, and I'm not saying this because I don't want to give Kevin too much credit, but let's just say my seven years was 2004 to 2011, right? That was when I had kind of my most successful ultra running. I was in my late 30s, early 40s. It was kind of my sweet spot, right? And now I've had a good, whatever, eight years. Since then, I've run a lot less. I've gotten a lot slower. I've had a couple major life-altering surgeries. I've switched jobs. I'm almost an empty nester. So my whole personal life is changed. I mean, I'm still married after, you know, 28 years, but, you know, life is very different. I'm living in Arkansas, for goodness sake. So, all of those things. What I wonder is, can you come back and eke out another 7 years? And maybe it's another 7 years that's different from the seven that you were at the highest level, but maybe it's 7 years of, doing a different 100-miler every summer. Maybe it's for me, like doing something I've never been able to do because of my job and my family, but I know Sally has been able to do it, is race internationally. You know, I'm going to try once a year to race internationally. So have some sort of goal like that could be inspired, excuse me, by the comeback. And could be something to seek and maybe in the process debunk the Sawchuk 7. Because unfortunately, I think he's probably right that if I think of athletes I've coached, athletes I've observed, that there is some truth to that kind of 7 year window.
Well, Kevin Sawchuk is brilliant, and it's a good thing he's not here to further this. But I do think, and I don't even know what that meant. If there's ever a time for me to do editing, it would be that last statement. But let's start over. I think that the Sawchuk 7 is racing your fastest and best time. And maybe these comebacks that we're talking about were short-sighted. We're thinking about how do we perform at our very best? And if we're not performing at our very best, then we're thinking of excuses, or we're excusing ourselves from the sport, when in fact there's all kinds of chapters in these Sawchuk 7. Maybe it's just mid-pack enjoying the race like you're doing right now, AJW, and finding that there's different conversations that happen mid-pack versus in the front of the pack. And so there are many Sawchuk 7 chapters that we can write, and not always focus on this comeback to the podium, because there's more to this racing the podium. In fact, there's only three spots on the podium and usually more than three people entering a race. So there must be more to it than the podium. And I think for those podium strivers, they get a chance to see where the rest of this sport is about.
Well, and one of the points, if we haven't made it,
I don't think there was a point anything I said in there, Scott.
No, that's why I'm trying to make one.
Thank you.
That's why I'm trying to make one. I'm trying to
salvage that. Yeah.
Is the Sawchuk 7 doesn't have to be, like in AJW's case from 2004 to 2011, concurrent 7 years. It could be 3 years, and then you have a job change that you have to really put in a lot of work, and you have to lay off running for a couple years or however, but then you can come back and you can now have another 2 years or 4 years to add on. So it doesn't have to be concurrent. It can be in pieces, if you will, if I understand the Sawchuk 7.
Well, since Kevin has really never had an official stance on it or written any articles on it, we've kind of given it the name and the definition.
Did
as
we
well.
Ask him about that when we interviewed him for Western States?
I
thought we did.
I don't think he knew what it was.
We'll have to go back and listen to that interview with. By the way, he's a PhD. He's a doctor.
MD, yes. And I thought Sawchuk 7 sounded like a mountain range somewhere in Colorado.
It's the fastest known time of the Sawchuk 7.
Yeah, Nolan 14, Sawchuk 7.
Yes, that's what I thought.
Oh, and I mean, if you ask Kevin, he'll tell you how smart he is.
I'm glad he doesn't listen to this podcast.
He's only been on it, but he doesn't listen.
Right. What else do you think is important to comebacks? Anything we missed, Sally?
I feel like we've covered most of it. I think it's just, again, it's just going back to the mental side of it. When we think about coming back, we often focus so much on how am I going to physically build this fitness up? And, you know, athletes that I coach, you know, I always have one or two that, you know, they either took a tumble or they have some nagging injury. And, you know, so I feel like I'm speaking to this every single day. And I'm always just speaking to the mental side. What can we do today? And taking it one day at a time. And of course, a support system really helps in that. I know not everyone has it. You know, my heart really goes out to some of you listening that are maybe living in places where, you know, there isn't like a big trail community, ultra community, or you just don't simply have it in your life schedule to be able to meet up with a group to go running or get workouts done with a friend. I speak to people that run solo all the time. And so when you then incur an injury or you have a setback, it's really easy to feel alone. And I think that many times that is what pulls away the motivation. It pulls away that hope. You know, obviously podcasts like this are very helpful because it can bring some insight, but it is finding, like, surround yourself with people, and they don't even need to be runners. It's just people that know you and love you and appreciate you for who you are. They're going to appreciate the fact that you have this passion and this love for what it is that you do. And so many times it's just being encouraged in just that. If you love something and you really want to do it, and this is kind of what keeps you rolling through your days, each week, then, you know, surrounding yourself and connecting with people that are going to be that source of encouragement, that goes a long way.
I appreciate that. And I've seen an interesting trend in my coaching practice. Sally probably has too, as we've seen this boom in ultra trail running and mm-hmm. more and more people coming to the sport. One of the, an interesting phenomenon are those athletes who are coming from like a team sport, a competitive team sport background. I'm thinking of a woman I'm working with now who was a Division I basketball player and a gentleman who was a Division I soccer player. So they've been in the crucible of competition in a way that's very, very different from ultra running and trail running. But then life, things have happened in their life. And then they've discovered this ultra running tribe, and that these people just go off in the woods and spend a whole day together, and that it's really cool. And these people are coming over to the sport, and what they're really coming back to their lives as athletes, but they really need to redefine themselves as an athlete, right? A Division I basketball or soccer player is a very different kind of athlete than a mid-pack ultra runner. But there's still athleticism involved. There's still discipline involved. There's still the camaraderie of the team involved. There's still, the focus and the patience and the perseverance. There's injury still involved. There's all those things. But what I've found is that you can come back from something, but you can also come back to something. Like these folks that might have thought they reached their athletic pinnacle when they were a senior and they got their final letter and their team made it to the regional tournament in the NCAAs or something, but that may not be the case, and they reinvent themselves. Obviously, you have the raw material of an athlete who's a Division I basketball player. You're going to be able to transfer that to something else, and I find it interesting that we're seeing that happen in the trail and ultra running community. And what you hope is that those folks can learn some patience and perseverance, as Sally has mentioned, because a lot of those sports are not so much about that. Basketball and soccer are a little bit more immediate gratification. So I find that's something that's important in this comeback discussion as well.
I'd just like to throw in there the people that are running and out there about micro comebacks, about, yes, we're out there, we're hitting the trail on our running days, but there's always something we can improve on or tune up. Maybe it's nutrition, maybe it's stretching, maybe it's doing strides or something before runs, per Mark Cucuzella, who's lectured us on that, and Scott and I have tried to employ that, just haven't done it. There are many things that we can do to improve our current game and put that comeback process into play. So any thoughts on micro comebacks?
Yeah, I think many times that's the best way to break down a big goal. So, I was actually just talking with an athlete the other day who's coming back from an injury and I'm going to start working with a coach and I have this pie in the sky. I want to run my first 50 miler. And it's easy to look at the big goal and in some ways be overwhelmed by it. But if you break down that big goal into pieces, into micro comebacks, it makes it so much more attainable, and I think you stay motivated longer. And so, what is it that I'm going to achieve this week? What am I going to achieve overall this month? What do I want to do over the course of these 12 weeks? And celebrating that, I think it's very easy to, it's so easy to find all the things that we're doing wrong or that we need to work on, or, look at how hard something is and not naturally look at what did we accomplish today? What was the little thing? And I'll talk to people like, you're coming out from this injury. Tell me something that you learned. And that conversation is always so interesting because many times it has nothing to do with the actual sport or even the injury. It's again, it's just going back to that mental game. But I love the idea of the micro comebacks. Don, I think that when we even make a race strategy, we break the race down, right? If you're going to run Western States, you break it down into, I'm going to run it in, people say to run it in three parts or four parts, but it kind of helps you not think so much about I'm running 100 miles. It's no, you're getting to an aid station or, we're just getting up the first big climb. And then from the big climb, we're going to run to Red Star. And, I think you feel so much more confident and stronger when you are able to celebrate the little micro comebacks along the way. It gives you more confidence to continue moving forward. You can look back and be like, look at all the things I accomplished, as opposed to, did I meet this one gigantic goal?
And I think the practicing the micro comeback allows you to become proficient when you have the big comeback. Once you've practiced those steps and you've put them into service, then when it's critical and you're coming back from that hip resurfacing surgery, you can say, "Hey, I've done these comebacks. I know the steps. I just need to be more patient, stretch it out, and I know the process. When I put the work in, all of a sudden, you turn the corner." And that's the crazy thing about soft tissue and comebacks. You put the work in, and finally, all of a sudden, you turn that corner. Much like, I always think of this visual, you know, you have a puddle and you're shoveling gravel into it, and the gravel just sinks into this puddle. And then all of a sudden, that one shovelful stays on top. And that's how quick things come. You just have to have faith and patience that that gravel will show up soon. Yeah.
Yeah, it's,
I want to say something. This is not meant to be funny, but I've had I think dozens of micro comebacks in my running career every time I've puked in a race. and I know I'm being serious. The reason is when that happens, it's a hard reset. Honestly, it's a hard reset, right? You've lost a lot of fluid, you've lost a lot of calories. And I see many people when that happens go into this kind of downward despair spiral. Oh my God, I'm throwing up. I've lost my stomach. My race is over. Mm. And that's precisely the time to do the opposite and problem solve and say, okay, I need to sip on a little bit of water. I need to take a few bites of saltines. I need to get some broth. I need to start this micro comeback, mm-hmm. right, with my stomach. Because we all four of us know that stomach woes bring down so many people in long distance races,
yeah.
that literally it could be a microclimate every time a micro comeback every time that happens. And, mm-hmm. You know, some people are better than it than others, but I will say that if you practice it, and I've had lots of practice, if you practice it, you can actually get better at it and make that. And then other things might happen. Let's say you roll into Michigan Bluff and your feet are shot, right? You've got blisters and you sit down and the podiatrist people are there and they fix up your feet and you're there 30, 40 minutes, but your feet are fixed up. They're bandaged up. You get back out there. It's time for a micro comeback right then and there.
Well, and I think that all this is good framing that, as Sally was saying, eating the elephant one bite at a time, having these micro comebacks, a comeback, if you've been off, you can't expect to get out there and become the same runner in 2 weeks or 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. As you said, Andy, that you may feel great one day and 2 days later when you're out on a run, it's as if you're a completely different runner and you totally fall apart. We need to remember that when we first started running, that's the way it was, right? I mean, I remember when I first started running, I went out to try to run 1 mile and I couldn't do it without walking. I need to remember that it takes time. It takes discipline, like we've been talking about.
I want to go back to the trail where Andy's thrown up.
Because we do think it's funny. We all think it's funny.
I have a story to share on that, too.
You first, funny. Sally. You first.
Share your puking story.
Okay, I wanted to bring this up because it's, and Andy, I know you have your throwing up stories, many stories, but it's interesting when you first enter the trail world and that happens, it is a little startling and you're like, oh my gosh, because what, in your mind, you're thinking, like, when I throw up, it's because I have the flu, I have food poisoning, right? And so growing up, you know, I'm going to go lay on the couch then. I'm taking a day off work. I'm taking a day off school. Throwing up is, you know, I'm sick. I can't keep doing this. But as the years have gone on, and I've had my fair share of puking too, I've learned it's like I go back to like my mind, like, is this just, I'm just going to approach it, not be surprised by it. I'm not going to be afraid of it. Many times, actually most of the time, it's my body giving a reaction to, hey, there's something that needs to be fixed here. We need to get rid of something and show that you can keep on running. And I just ran Javelina 100 a few weeks ago and I was having a great day stomach wise, food wise, everything. All I was eating just spring energy the whole time, eating pickles and potatoes from the aid stations. I felt amazing. And then when I was right before I left for my fourth loop, because that's a 5-loop race, my crew was like, let's get her a snow cone. She is going to love this snow cone. And of course, it's just like pure syrup. It's pure syrup with ice. And when I got into the aid station, I was like, that sounds amazing. So I downed the snow cone really fast. I leave with my pacer, Rachel, who's also my my teammate, Rachel Drake. We're no more than half a mile out from the aid station. And I immediately get fiery hot from head to toe. And I look at her, I was like, that was a really bad idea. I go, just so you know, I'm probably going to vomit. This is going to come up at some point. And she's like, oh, okay. Do you want to start walking? I was like, no, because I know I'm going to throw up and it's going to be really gross, but there's nothing I can do about that. So let's just keep running. And she just starts giggling like, you're crazy. And I'm like, yeah, but when you do it enough, when you know, like, I shouldn't have had that snow cone. My body's like, hey, idiot, you probably should have stuck to your original plan of real food, of eating spring. But now you're going to pay for it. So, of course, within a few minutes, I'm projectile vomiting all over the trail. But I'm not really stopping. Like, I stop for, like, maybe a couple of seconds. And in between vomiting, I'm like, we can keep going. And she's, like, rubbing my back. She's like, you are insane. And I was like, but it's going to be better. I promise you it's going to be better. We ended up running our fastest loop during that fourth loop. And obviously it was because she was there by my side. But we had, like, a good conversation about that. She's like, that was insane what you just did. And I was like, yeah, but there's been, like, times where I believed, oh, my gosh, I'm throwing up. My race is over. I go, but I actually know why I was throwing up. And I felt so much better when I was done throwing up. And it also just showed me, like, that you're going to be okay. Just keep moving forward. And so, but that took a lot of many bad races where I was in that situation to actually learn it. Because how many times have we stopped in a race only to 20, 30 minutes after stopping realize, wait, I'm fine. I just didn't want to pause. I didn't want to slow down. I didn't want to deal with the situation. I thought that it was over.
Yeah, I think throwing up, vomiting, you know, tossing your cookies on the trail is a chance to reset, chance for hope. Because I always know what happens to me. Things are going to get better. And the way I think that you can tell the difference between a new ultra runner and a veteran ultra runner, the new ultra runner, when they're throwing up, because we all get to do that, most of us, they have both hands on their knees.
Yeah.
Now, the veteran ultra runner has one hand on a knee and the other hand down their throat saying, let's get this out.
Let's get this on. Let's get down the trail.
We don't have time for this. Let's just get this done.
Or they're still moving. I mean, they're walking and throwing up and in between steps. I mean, it sounds so gross. Like, God bless our pacers if they're out there with us at that time. But, we're so resilient. We don't give ourselves enough credit for how strong we really are. And we're not going to discover that unless we really allow ourselves to be put in those situations and trust that I can push through this and I'm going to try. And the cool thing is that we continue to build upon those situations so that by the time we are at our next race, we are mentally tougher when we hit that rough patch again, because we can then remember, oh, I remember when I felt this way and I totally finished and I was fine.
I say, don't God bless our pacers, because ever since the invention of cell phones, every time I've had a puking episode in a 100-miler, my pacer,
it's on YouTube.
And started shooting video. So.
Well, speaking of that, we were just tagged in a tweet. We were tagged in a tweet this week or just yesterday of some poor guy that Blow Up Arch and Dylan Bowman both tagged us on this tweet of some guy that's running up a hill. And he's just running really, really strong, and all of a sudden goes over to the side and blah, runs a couple more steps. Blah. So yes, if you're a pacer, you should record it, because it's not funny at the time, but afterwards, it's extremely funny.
Yeah. Hey, so AJW, you've probably thrown up more than all three of us put together. So let's talk about throwing up etiquette on the trail. Do you have anything for us you can share? Because of all your practices, you've probably made some mistakes. What are the top three items we should consider. Location. Well, first,
you need to know that you need to choose the, if you're on a single track section, you need to make sure you throw up off the trail.
Right.
It's also really, really poor form to throw up in an aid station. So even if you just get out, get a couple steps outside of the aid, throwing up in the aid station is just, that's just bad. You just shouldn't do it. It's just like taking a pee in an aid station. You got to get outside there. The second thing to realize, and this is especially true for running at night, you know, most of the time I've puked, it's been in the nighttime portion of races, is that you are letting out a lot of volume. You can, one of my pacers, Brian Powell, likened the sounds I make when I puke to a grizzly bear mating call. And that can be scary to people that are around you at night, because it's a scary sound when you hear somebody. So you need to be aware, and you need to, you know, if they're around, you say, "Oh, I'm okay, I'm good, don't worry, I'm just puking here."
That's not a bear. Now you're at night, AJW. Let me interrupt. You're at night. What's proper etiquette? Light on, light off.
Oh, light off.
Okay.
Light off.
You don't need to light that stuff up.
you don't wanna see, you know, you don't wanna see those little bits of cliff block and potato chip and chicken broth and Mountain Dew, by the way, it makes a nasty puke. It really does. It comes into your, you know. The third most important etiquette thing is, if you're with your pacer, is you know, kind of like what Sally did, you turn to them. Keep in mind that this is scientific. There is a post-puke euphoria phenomenon. Mm. So immediately after a puke, you can buy yourself about 10 or 15 minutes of just feeling really, really good. You've emptied out your system. So I'm not surprised that Sally had her fastest loop in loop four after her projectile vomit. So you take advantage of that euphoria, but you also need to talk to your pacer and say, okay, make sure I sip off of this gel, or I take a little bit of a salt tab, or I get some, because you got to get stuff back into your system pretty quickly. So off the trail, not in the aid station, be aware of the volume and the noise that you're making, and take advantage of the post-barf euphoria.
Well, that was pretty good for off the cuff, AJW. Well, whether it's a comeback on the trail, which can happen through many races, we all have many comebacks through races to motivate ourselves and to take the steps. Those same steps are likely required during training comebacks or just comebacks in general in life. Scott?
I'm glad to have this conversation, because I am in the midst of a comeback. At least I hope I am. And so it's good to know that other people have gone through it and that there is hope. And I love some of the things that came up, that just do something every day. Every day, do something. Shovel some gravel into that puddle of water. Thank you for the metaphor there, Freeman.
Yeah. Yeah.
And eventually, you're going to see that gravel build up. You'll see it peek at its nose out of the puddle, and you can step on it. That's my addition to the metaphor.
Thank you for telling us that. I mean, it's not easy. Having a comeback is not easy. There are bad days. There are days where you feel like you're regressing. There are days, I mean, as I said earlier, there were days in May and June where I was just like, screw it, I'm just going to play golf. And you want to try to, you know, fight that urge and know and have that hope and optimism that you can make it through, and let the comeback come to you. And Sally's point about patience, let the comeback come to you. But if you can be disciplined, getting something done every day, even if it's in Don's puddle, whatever that metaphor is, we can move forward in that, along the comeback trail.
Yeah, it is a comeback, not a go back. You know, to your point, you mentioned comeback, to give yourself patience and permission to come back, and to execute an effective comeback, it needs time. You can't just turn the corner instantly. It does take some contributions of that gravel in that puddle. AJW, I'll send you a meme or something on that. Okay, I'll find one. I'm sure there's one out there.
I have a feeling we're going to have lots of puddles and mud in the next our next text exchange.
It's not going to be pretty. Hey, Sally, why don't you close us out with some words of Sally wisdom here on Comebacks? Save this podcast. Would you save this thing?
This has been a great conversation. I love it. I just want to encourage anyone that's in this season right now in their lives. If you are, if you're coming back from injury or maybe just a disaster of a race, remember this is supposed to be a part of the adventure of your life. It's supposed to be there. And there's so much good in it. And the reality is that every time you have a breakdown, you have a setback, and you choose to proceed forward with hope of coming back, you are already a better version of yourself. You're already mentally tougher. And that says a lot about you and your character, and realizing that you are now set up to tackle even harder, more challenging things ahead and bigger goals ahead. So well done.
Hey, so if you are in the middle of a comeback or plan on having a comeback, these two coaches have been on the podium and they've come back to the podium. And so it's you can certainly reach out to them. They understand. They know what's going on.
Yep. We'll leave links to their coaching contact information in the show notes. Everyone that listens to the podcast will be able to reach out to them.
So come back.
Moss. Hey, how's the frother? Is the frother still working, Sally?
It is. It's alive and well.
Did you have a little froth this morning? Did you have a little froth this morning?
This morning I did. It was a really quick coffee this morning, but I do have this amazing, can you see?
Oh yeah, it's a Sally van. Yeah.
The best with like 400 sort of ports on top.
I love it.
Cool. Yeah, it's been a busy morning, but the frother is one of my best morning friends.
Hey, Andy, thanks for the topic. I loved it, Andy.
Yeah, that is a great topic, and I think we covered a lot of ground, but that was a lot of fun, really fun. And hey, Don and Scotty, I wanted to mention something to you. I was down at Pinhoti pacing a couple weeks ago, and this dude comes up to me just out of the blue. And he's like, "You're AJW." I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "I'm the guy from the Pinter Posse." And it took me a sec. You remember in that Golden Hour video we made?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You said he wants to enjoy this. He is not going to run this in. He's having too much fun.
He came right. He was like, I'm that guy. It was so much fun to talk
about.
Oh, that's funny. That's great.
I love it.
Well, let's do this again.
This is going to be posted not this week but next week.
Oh, okay. Great.
So we'll let you know when it gets posted. Hey,
very cool.
Hey, Dean, I see that you're on. Just stay on. We're just finishing up a podcast here.
Hey, Dean.
All right, guys. See you later.
Okay. See ya. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.